So we've been going through the Bodhisattva vows, and we got all of four of them last session amidst much good discussion. So just to review the four that we did. And the first one, it's praising ourselves or alternatively belittling others. And this is done out of attachment to receiving material offerings, praise, respect. Okay, and the second one, not giving material aid or not sharing the Dharma with people who ask sincerely and who really need it, who are prepared, and here because of miserliness. And the third one, when others come and apologize to us for harms that they've done, or mistakes that they've made, then either not accepting their apology and not forgiving them, or retaliating instead, you know, really dumping on them afterwards. And then the fourth one, abandoning the Mahayana by saying that Mahayana texts are not the word of the Buddha, or teaching what appears to be the Dharma and what isn't. And so this last one arrives at by maybe hearing the Mahayana teachings and thinking, oh, but the Bodhisattva path is too hard and the six perfections are too much. And I can't do that, you know. That makes me shake too much to even contemplate having to change that much. So the Buddha must not have really meant that. Yeah. So the Buddha didn't really mean, you know, to cherish others more than self. The Buddha didn't really mean to be that generous. So all that stuff that they say the Buddha said, he didn't really say. Okay? So in that way, rejecting or abandoning the Mahayana teachings. And then what that leads to is the second part of it, which is then making up your own thing and passing it off as the Dharma. Okay? So what the Buddha said doesn't correspond with what our ego likes, so then we reject it, and instead we start teaching and believing what our ego likes. Yeah. So very easy, this one. Yeah. Because the whole thing about the Dharma is that it definitely pushes our buttons, and that sometimes we really don't like this. And so rather than look at our buttons and have the courage to kind of work through the things that hearing the teachings brings up, then we just kind of poo-poo it and shun it and like that. Okay? So, again, this is quite different than having a good debate. Yeah, having a good debate, questioning, inquiring, that's a whole different ballgame. Okay? Don't confuse them. Then the fifth one, taking things that belong to either the Buddha or the Dharma or the Sangha. And so in this case, when we talk about the Buddha, we're talking about the fully enlightened being, or in this case, the different images that represent him or her. When we talk about the Dharma, we're talking about the realizations of the path or the scriptures that represent them. And when we're talking about the Sangha, we're talking about any single being who has full realization of emptiness directly on the path of seeing, or alternatively, a group of four fully ordained monks and nuns. Okay? So this is stealing from any of those. Okay? So you might say, well, how can anybody possibly do that? Well, again, it's very easy, you know. There's all these really nice offerings on the altar, and I mean, don't you just feel like having a banana now, you know? I mean, Buddha won't miss it. Okay, so this mind that just kind of takes things off the altar because, you know, you want it, you know? Or, you know, things that have been offered in good faith to the monastic community or to a shrine, then we take it for our own personal use, our own personal welfare, you know? So it is quite possible to do this one. Now, somebody maybe offers cloth to make covers for the sutras, and we say, well, actually, you know, that cloth, I could make a shirt out of it, you know. much more practical. I need a shirt. You know, the scriptures, they don't need a shirt. You know, so we misappropriate things like that. So stealing from the triple gem. And especially here to be careful of is the monastic community. You know, kind of going into a temple or a monastery and saying, you know, like, you know, you go and you stay in a temple or a monastery and they loan you a blanket or a pillow or something when you stay there. And then when you leave, you think, well, they have so many blankets and pillows, you know, and I really need this. And then you just kind of take it. Yeah. So that kind of thing, things that have been offered to, you know, to the monastic community, to the temple. And, you know, we just kind of take it on our own.
Mm-hmm. So how do you then feel so far?
Yeah, well, with the attitude that we're the caretaker for the Buddha's shrine. Yeah, so we take it off simply because we're trying to keep it neat and clean and tidy. We're the caretaker. And so I find it also just kind of really helpful to kind of almost, you know, say to the Buddha, I'm taking these things off now. Is that okay? Yeah, just to kind of make really sure, you know, about our motivation for it. Yeah. Okay, then the sixth one is abandoning the Dharma by saying that the texts which teach the three vehicles are not the Buddha's words. So the three vehicles, we have the hearer's vehicle and the solitary realizer's vehicle, and these both lead to nirvana. And then we have the bodhisattva vehicle. So these are three kind of paths of training that one does. So any of the sutras or the different scriptures that explain these paths of training leading to nirvana, leading to full enlightenment, then again, you know, the mind doesn't like it. We don't like what it says. It pushes our buttons. So we abandon it and we say, well, the Buddha didn't teach it.
Okay.
Yes. Hearers, they're called hearers because they hear the teachings and then they listen to the teachings and then teach them to others. Okay? So, you know, kind of things that the Buddha did taught, which are for our benefit to practice, then we just say, well, actually the Buddha didn't teach those and I don't really need to practice them. And, I mean, again, you can see this happening, you know? I mean, when you really think a lot about the bodhisattva vows, you know, different people kind of saying, well, actually, ethics isn't so important. We don't really need to do that. And, you know, right livelihood isn't really so important. This is another culture. And, you know, it's quite easy to kind of do these things. That doesn't mean that what right livelihood meant 2,500 years ago we can practice in a literal way right now, but we can develop our own kind of Western right livelihood. You know, but just kind of saying, well, right livelihood doesn't matter, ciao, goodbye, then, you know, it's abandoning the Dharma. And then the seventh one is disrobing ordained people. Okay, and so this depends a lot on your motivation. So with anger, with a really nasty, evil, kind of bad motivation, then, you know, you beat somebody who's ordained, or you rob something from them, or you put them in prison, or you kick them out of the monastery. You know, even if they've kind of broken their vows, but with a really nasty motivation and a harmful intention, you deprive them of their robes, these kinds of things. And so one example that one teacher used was like, let's say somebody, you know, if somebody breaks one of their four root monastic vows, then they're no longer a monastic, you know. And then if you just kind of forcefully kick, you know, fling them out of the monastery, then that would be transgressing this vow. And what you have to do is kind of gently encourage them to, you know, change their clothes and go back to lay life and do it like that, rather than just having a really angry, harmful intention towards somebody. So that's one way of breaking this one. And the second way is causing somebody to lose their ordination, you know, making situations such that people break their ordination. So, for example, when the communists invaded Tibet, they went into the monasteries and nunneries and they made, you know, the monks and nuns have sex together in public, you know, or they made the monastic people go out and kill animals, So this kind of thing, you know, really forcing people to break their monastic vows. It's a really harmful thing. Or, you know, making somebody give up their monastic vows by saying, well, it's just useless, you know, being ordained is useless. Better, you know, you're a lay person. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're the same as the four precepts, you know, the four of the first five precepts. So not killing, and here, you know, to break it completely for the monastic, it's killing a human being. Not stealing, something that you would be imprisoned for in the society. For the monastic, instead of sexual, you know, unwise sexual behavior, it's a celibacy vow, so avoiding intercourse. And then lying about one's spiritual attainments. Okay, so that's the seventh one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Except the one about celibacy. No, the four lay vows, to break them from the root. Okay, then it's with these conditions, killing a human being, stealing something of value, you know, except with the lay vows, it's unwise sexual behavior, principally meaning adultery, and then lying about one's spiritual attainment. So you have to do those specific things, you know, with the preparation, the action, and the kind of completion to break it. But if you kill an animal or lie about something else, it is damaging your lay vows. But it's not a complete, you know, transgression from the root. Okay? Yeah. So it's good to know this, you know, because it's really pointing out, like for the lying one, really a specific kind of lying that is more harmful than other kinds of lying. Okay, then the eighth one, committing any of the five extremely negative actions. These are sometimes called the five heinous crimes, or another translation is the five acts of immediate retribution. And when we went over precious human life, it was included in that list, you know, because they say one of the reasons we have a precious human life is that we haven't done these. So the bodhisattva vows, you know, are really, again, emphasizing in this case. Although these five are things that, you know, hopefully we wouldn't do anyway, and that anybody in their right mind wouldn't do, but it's really emphasizing in the bodhisattva vows not to do these because they're really negative, and how opposing it is to the bodhisattva practice. And so those five are killing one's mother, killing one's father, killing an arhat, a liberated being, or intentionally drawing blood from the Buddha. Remember, I tell you the stories about, you know, Buddha's cousin, Devadatta, and is doing that. And then causing schism within the Sangha community. In other words, within a monastic community, making them fight and split into two groups, you know, so that the monastic community just gets really hostile. Because that is really negative for the Dharma, for everybody practicing it. Okay, so that's kind of, again, emphasizing that this is something really be real clear about and don't get involved in. And then the ninth one is holding wrong views, okay, or holding distorted views. So this is very similar in the 10 negative actions, 10 destructive actions, the last one of wrong views or distorted views. This is, you know, basically the same here. And so it doesn't mean, you know, wrong political views, like liking George Bush, you know, because that's definitely wrong. you know, any way you look at it. But it doesn't mean those kind of views. It's talking about different, you know, philosophical views that if you, you know, with a tenacious, stubborn mind full of misconceptions that doesn't want to listen to anything else, hold on to a wrong view, such as saying, well, absolutely, positively, there's no past or future lives, forget it. You know, or there's no such thing as a Buddha. It's impossible to become Buddha. You know, human beings are innately evil, they're innately sinful and selfish, impossible to become a Buddha. You know, or, yeah, so it's denying the existence of enlightenment, denying the existence of the triple gem. There's no such thing as the Buddha. There's no path to enlightenment. There's no beings who've seen reality. You know, emptiness is just a fraud. You know, so these really kind of stubborn, wrong views where one just gets entrenched in it and doesn't want to listen to anything else. And so, again, this is very different than having doubts. Because when we come into the Dharma, we have lots of doubts. You know, we doubt rebirth, we doubt Buddhahood, we doubt enlightenment. So, you know, one way of looking at it, doubt is a step in the right direction, because maybe before we came into Dharma, we had definite wrong views. Okay, so we come into Dharma, we begin to have some doubts, but they're still inclined towards the negative thing, but it is something better. And then if we kind of work on the doubts, maybe we get to an equal doubt, a kind of balanced doubt, and then maybe a kind of doubt that is inclined towards believing in reincarnation, the existence of the triple gem. We're still not sure, we're questioning, we're searching, we're asking people questions, we're debating about it. You know, and then through that, we get some understanding, we get a correct assumption, then we get some inferential understanding. And in that way, you know, our belief becomes clear, because instead of just kind of following the negative doubt and making it into a wrong conclusion, we ask, we debate, we discuss, you know, and then our own understanding increases. So having doubts is something very different than having wrong views. But at the same time, we have to be careful that our doubts don't degenerate into wrong views. Okay? And the reason that this is so harmful, you know, it's not that you're a bad Buddhist, okay? It's not that, you know, you don't believe in your Buddhist catechism, you don't believe in rebirth, so that's a sin, and, you know, it's not like that, okay? It's more that, for example, if we don't believe in the existence of past and future lives, then we're not going to take care of karma. If we don't take care of karma, who does it harm? Yeah. If we deny the existence of the triple gem, you know, that doesn't bother the Buddha, you know? Buddha doesn't care from his side, her side. You know, but if we deny the existence of the triple gem, the existence of enlightenment, then we're putting, you know, ourselves in chains, because we're condemning ourselves to, you know, some hopeless, cynical attitude of life without any kind of openness to progression and change and transformation. So again, who does that view harm? Yeah. So all these things about wrong views, it's not a thing of being a good Buddhist or a bad Buddhist. It's that having these views turns us away from the path to happiness, which is what we want.